Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I love Fridays. I love the weekend. Get to just chill, not as many pressures. We're all like that in the world.
Thursday's my weekend.
But this takes it to a new level because we have two guests today. One is a high-ranking official in the National Hockey League, a little intimidated by Colin Campbell coming on. Not sure how I'm going to approach this. Don't want him to bite my head off. Have you ever met Coley?
No. What's he like?
He can be intimidating.
Wow. Yeah. He's a farmer from Tilsonburg, Ontario. How can he be intimidating?
Oh, you looked him up on Wikipedia?
My neighbor told me.
No, Coley's going to be a blast, but Spencer Carberry.
We're going to talk to Coley about just coming out of the manager's meetings in a little more detail than what we heard from all the reporters.
Yeah, didn't sound like there was very much there, so we're going to have to do our
we're going to drag a lot. We're going to drag stuff. Oh, yeah. We're going to be journalists.
Journalistic digging. And Spencer Carberry, head coach of the Washington Capitals, is set to join us, and heard a lot about his personality, and he's just a young guy and loving life and coaching his butt off right now. I'm excited to get to know him a little bit.
You know, the fascination about him is that he spent time here in Toronto, and I don't think we ever heard him speak. Not once did we hear him speak on Sheldon Keith's.
A lot of teams don't let their assistant coaches talk.
I know, but next thing you know, this guy's getting a job in Washington, and now I'm seeing an interview and saying, "Well, gosh, we should be doing that. We should be using assistant coaches interviews. We used to do assistant coaches all the time."
Yeah, but organizations want one voice, and I understand that.
Sometimes, you know, if things have to change, you know, and you can't be so regimented. You can't be too structured.
You're selfish. You want to talk to everybody, and the organization wants to manage the message.
Yeah. I think in order to grow the game, you can manage the message at the same time. If the assistant coach and the head coach aren't on the same page, the assistant coach shouldn't be there.
True, but what if the assistant coach says something that the head coach doesn't want out, and he just offers it up and doesn't even realize the manager doesn't want it out, and the assistant coach says
part of, in my opinion, this should be part of a program, as a succession plan system, so that you're nurturing the assistant coaches to learn how to speak properly in front of the media.
If you're going to let everybody speak and you're worried about the message, then the message is going to get curtailed within the group, and you're not going to get anything anyway.
Well, here's the message. Spencer Carberry is waiting for us.
Oh. Did you get a light?
No, I just knew.
Because he joined about 20 seconds ago.
Something tells me this guy's tech savvy.
Colin Campbell coming up after we chat with the head coach of the Washington Capitals. He's part of the Great Chase. Watching it firsthand. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is fun because we spend a lot of time talking about the Washington Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin, and this time we saved it for the full interview because we have his head coach, Spencer Carberry, with us.
Hold on, though. We also saved it for the day after.
Yes.
They became the first team to clinch a playoff spot, right, Spencer?
Yes. First, went from last year to being the last team to clinch to the first team this year.
Fantastic.
First time
congratulations.
Since the late 70s that's happened, that the last team has been the first.
Yeah, I read that 79-80, I think the last time it happened.
That was before your time.
Yes, just barely, but yeah.
So, go ahead, Darren.
What do you attribute that dramatic turnaround to then?
I would point to a combination. I think last year, the group that was here, us getting into the playoffs and sort of grinding our way through the second half of last season, even after we made some trades at the deadline to sort of quote-unquote sell Anthony Mantha, Joel Edmondson, but the way that we played down the stretch to find our way into the playoffs, I think I gave our group a lot of confidence, even though it was a quick playoff appearance with the Rangers. I think it gave us some confidence going into this year that, okay, if our team got a little bit better, I think the recipe and our system and what we're doing, I think, is working. And then the other part, which is a huge piece of it, is the off-season additions and not just the players, Logan Thompson's, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Matt Roy, Jacob Chychrun, but them fitting in with our group this year pretty seamlessly. Like there hasn't been a lot of growing pains with those guys. So those would be the two things, the confidence that we got from last year and then the additions.
I'm not going to ask for specifics. I just want to know how much fun you're having.
A ton of fun. It is. We have a really fun group that enjoys coming to the rink, that can laugh, ultra, ultra competitive, really serious when games are on the line, but also has a great time with each other and in our meetings and on the bus and on the road. You can tell there's a genuine love for one another inside of our group, and you feel that on a daily basis.
So when you got the job, and part of it was, well, you're going to have to manage Alex Ovechkin, because lots of coaches have had challenges managing Alex Ovechkin. What was the first thing that came to your mind?
It was after I spoke with him, and just even after going through the process, I knew there were coaching elite level players, especially veteran elite level players, there's significant challenges. So I always knew that going in. Now I will say you're a little bit nervous. Okay, how's this going to go? Hopefully he's receptive to coaching. Immediately when I talked to him, when I called him and he was in Moscow right after I got the job, we're catching up. How are you doing? How's everything? Family stuff. And then immediately he goes to, okay, what are we doing? We just missed the playoffs. How are we making this team better right now in the off season? Who are we signing? Can we get better up front? Can we add some scoring? It's amazing. Like he just has, he's thinking of how is our team going to get better? And that's immediately what, well, I said, whoa, I haven't even talked to the general manager about personnel yet. and the other thing that I think people, even though there's stuff written in the media about challenges that he has, like, O is a super, super coachable player. And so when him and I talk all the time, sometimes it's about our team and captain stuff. And hey, here's how I'm feeling. What do you think about practice today? Here's the plan coming up, all that stuff. But then when you talk to him about his individual game and some things that he's doing a really good job and some areas that I feel like he needs to add or he needs to improve in, he's extremely receptive. And he takes that and goes, okay. And so that helps with a lot of what we do culturally, from when your captain is really, really coachable. And when I ask him to do certain things, is it going to be perfect? No, but he's bought in and is going, hey, you're the coach. You tell me what to do. And that, that coachability sort of bleeds throughout our whole entire group, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So the one thing that jumps out at me, and I've said this before on lots of different platforms, 1743. Do you know what that is, 1743?
No.
That's his ice time this year. It's the lowest level of ice time, really, in his career. You have him down since the year they missed the playoffs. He was at 2012. You know, his career average is over 20 minutes and 30 seconds. You've got him almost 2.5 minutes less than that. I think that's a factor. I think that's his sweet spot. And there, I can't speak for other coaches, but I think that there were times where he wouldn't have bought into playing that little.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think it's completely fair. And him and I had candid conversations about that. And he would, even sitting here right now, he would disagree and say, I can handle the 20 minutes. But what he, again, receptive to the coaching part is, oh, and this is what we talked about after the end of last season, is can we get more efficient minutes? So are you able to forecheck a little bit more? Are you able to use your skating a little bit more if you're playing 17 and a half versus 20? Can you be more productive in your 5-on-5 minutes? And that was my point to him of why I felt like it was important that his minutes came down a little bit and we're not just going out there and getting a ton of quantity minutes that there's not that much quality to. And that he's done a really good job with that. Now, I will tell you, he's a competitor. So when I don't call his number, he's looking back and wants to be out on the ice. Like, that is never going to change with O. But I think he understands, as long as you're there's a method to the madness, and he understands, okay, this is why Carbs is doing this, and this is, and here's the results of it. He buys it.
What's the coach's strategy when a player's looking back at him? Are you looking at the stands across the way? Are you looking at the timekeeper's box? Like, what are you looking at trying not to see him?
Darren, it's amazing. I can feel out of the right side of my face a head turn. And you always can feel when a player, especially of O's stature, is like, coach, am I up yet? And sometimes I just have to say, oh, it's Nick Dowd's line or it's Doobie's line. But they do, like, you know, and I appreciate that, because I got no problem with someone that wants to be out there and given the ball to take the last shot. So I love that. It doesn't mean you're always going to go out there. No, but I appreciate the fact that he always wants to be out there and always is letting it be known that he wants it.
I didn't know what 1743 meant either, so I looked it up, and future U.S. President Thomas Jefferson was born. That's what I thought he was going. I thought you were going historical, John.
You know, I wish you guys would get into the hockey lingo, you know, you know, because those of us that are right on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah.
Us BC boys, we didn't learn all that kind of fancy stuff at school, did we, Spencer?
No, we didn't.
He's a Vancouver Island boy, Darren. You know, we're tired. We're so tired of hearing about everybody from Brandon. We had to bring somebody from British Columbia on the show.
I just love how the mainland guys all of a sudden grab on to the Islanders. Like, oh, we love you whenever it's convenient. That's what it is.
It's always in the lower mainland. It's always a great place to go for a summer holiday.
Yeah. It is. Did you have a number in mind for Ovi's ice time? Or was it just, let's see where it goes?
I didn't have a specific number. I did know it needed to be cut down. I mean, This is the thing that a lot of us, because of what he's doing, he's 39 years old.
Yeah.
It's fascinating and amazing in a league that it's fast. This league is faster than it's ever been, younger than it's ever been. You got guys flying around the ice. Everybody can skate. He's 39 years old. And so I knew and felt like, especially last year, and especially as you talk about going through 82 games and towards the end of the season and playoffs, hopefully we're in there. This is what I was thinking in the off season. And we are, is you want him to feel really, really good and fresh. And so I knew and wanted his minutes to come down. And the power play stuff, I'm fine with him playing the full 2 minutes. A lot of people ask me about that, of, you know, your stance on that. Would it be better if he played a minute? I actually think there's a ton of benefits to him playing the 2 minutes. I think he's still a weapon over there. He scored, I want to say, we've been tracking it, he's got 5 second unit power play goals. He'd be close to the league lead in second unit.
Yeah, for sure.
Goals in the back half. So, yeah, I didn't have a specific target number, but knew that his number or his total time on ice, especially 5-on-5, needed to come down a bit.
So the other two guys that really it's hard to imagine. There's three guys that we really need to touch on. You touched on Dubois, Jacob Chychrun, who for the first time in his career is healthy, and a healthy Chychrun is a great Chychrun, and then Logan Thompson, who I don't think you could have ever envisioned him playing as well as he has for your team this year. Fair?
Yeah, completely fair, and has really. The way that he's come in and making that move and giving us a two-headed monster in Charlie Lindgren and Logan Thompson, and to be able to keep, I think that's a subtle part to Logan's success. Not that he wouldn't be successful as a starter, but for him to be able, through the first 40 games, we just went back and forth, alternate. So rested guy, rested guy, rested guy. That there's something to be said for that, especially, you know, early in the season, letting them recharge, be refreshed every single time they started, to having two capable number one guys really helped. And Logan's been fantastic. He's had an incredible year. I think he set a record I read the other day for quickest to 30 wins or with the least amount of losses, a throwback name of Tiny Thompson. So with that,
John covered Tiny.
I met Cecil Tiny Thompson.
You did not.
The first year that we were doing Calgary Flame games in 1980 in the old Stampede Corral, who walked around the corner? Tiny Thompson. Massive man, 6'4". He was huge.
No way.
Yeah, he was a big a big man in a small man's position way back then. Sorry, history lesson done. Okay, we're talking to Spencer Carver.
Also, the Tiny was a mocker.
Right. Mocker. Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. You know, it's like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So Chychrun.
Yeah. So so Logan, fantastic thus far. Chicky came in, and it was one of those trades in the offseason that I feel like worked out for both teams. Nick Jensen, great defender, had been in Washington for a long time, but we were one of the lowest scoring teams in the National Hockey League last year from the back end. Want to say maybe 30th out of 32. So we were looking for some offense from the back end, skater, someone that could shoot the puck, and it just worked out. And Chicky coming here, he's one of those personalities that has just fit in so well with our group. He's so likable, his demeanor, his attitude, his competitiveness, like everything has just fit in so well. And so when he got here right away, it was just really seamless. Him and John Carlson started playing together right away. Developed some chemistry, and his skill set, and like you said, being healthy, he's just flourished here, and he's been a difference maker for us all year long from the back end, driving especially offensively. And then Pierre-Luc Dubois, it was a position that we were really looking at, because the center ice position, we've had Nick Dowd and Dylan Strom, and Connor McMichael was playing there last year and did a real good job, but we felt like if we could get another centerman that, you know, a top end centerman that could play against some of the best centermen in the league, and Stromer can, but it also frees him up a little bit to give him more offensive matchups. And Dubé has been lights out for us since the day he got here as well. What a difference he's made of being able to play tough minutes, 200-foot game, and then also contributing offensively as well.
Can you tell
you have a heart-to-heart with him?
Yeah, lots of them, yeah. He just, his story and his experiences in different organizations and how he's grown and matured and how he's learned about his game. Like, he's such a smart hockey mind, and I'll tell you why I say that. like all the X's and O's and out on the ice. There's tons of smart players in the league. But what he is really in tune with, he's a coach's son. And so he knows everything about the game and remembers it after the game, after a shift. If I talk to him about something on the ice, he knows exactly when it happened, the time of game, who the opponent around him was. It's amazing. Like, he can play the game back in his mind, and he's always in good positions. He's always plays with his head up. And that's why I've made comparisons. Like, I think he's going to be a Selke type of guy in this league for years to come because of that 200-foot game that he's played. And I think he's still got more offensive potential that's just going to continue to grow. You can see in the second half of the year, he's really started to finish a lot more. He was kind of snake bitten at the beginning of the year, wasn't finishing a lot, but was getting good looks. And now he's finishing at a higher rate. He's moved himself onto our first unit power play now. So really, really cerebral, intelligent player for us.
The amazing thing about your club, I was just looking at the roster, everybody's just having such a lights out year. Everybody. I mean, when you think of what Protus has done for you, and you talked about Connor McMichael, there are the list. I mean, we could probably go down just numerically and go through every guy and talk about how great this year is because everybody's having such a great individual performance.
Yeah. And I truly believe this, and it's been our mantra since the beginning of the year, is it's a product of the group. Is when we have everybody bought in and we play four lines, we play three sets of D, we play two goaltenders. And when everybody is on the same page and everybody's bought in, each individual will have success inside of that. I truly believe that. And to see that come to fruition is nice because it doesn't always happen. There's going to have guys that have off years or they don't finish at a high rate. Pucks don't go in for them. That's going to happen. This year, a lot of pucks are going in for us, and that's great. But you're seeing the product of the group being, and it's nice to be able to see all these individual achievements for guys and accomplishments. Tom Wilson's a 30-goal scorer for the first time in his career. So for these guys, for as much as they put into the team part of it, for them to be rewarded individually is great to see.
Ovi's been occupied, certainly from a media perspective. Who's the compass of the team when he's busy?
John Carlson. Yeah, John is our, I find him to be he's the most centric. He attracts all the attention. He's a personable guy. He's very animated. He controls the room. He controls the room with his, it's just his personality. He's very infectious. People gravitate towards him. And I always tell him this, like, Willie's an incredible leader. O is obviously our captain and O is O. But John Carlson is the guy inside of our room that everybody sort of gravitates towards. And he's always at the center of everything.
So take this next question as a compliment. How are you going to manage adversity? Because do you feel you've had adversity yet this year?
So it's a great question because I've thought a lot about that. The only really adversity we've hit, if you look at results wise, we lost three in a row late February, three in a row at home.
Right.
Which, you know, we had to sort of find our way through coming out of the break. But I thought
were too rested during the break. You had nobody in the tournament. I know. So your guys they had too much sunshine.
Well, you know what happened is we played a back-to-back right out. We played incredible in Pittsburgh, won whatever, I can't remember the score, but maybe 7-2. Then we come home and play a back-to-back against Edmonton, win that game 6-1 or something like that. So I think we got a little overconfident. Oh, this is going to be easy. We didn't have anyone at the Four Nations. Let's just roll through the second half. And that caught up with us pretty quickly. But you know where I think we have had adversity, which I think will help us, or I'm hoping has sort of calloused us to moments that are going to come up, that is we have trailed in a ton of hockey games this year, a ton of games. And so, yeah, we may not have gone through a five-game skid or had to have a real, you know, players-only meeting or really broken it down. But we have gone into some third periods, I'm going to say at least 20 times, where it did not look good and we were not playing well and we needed to figure out a way to right the ship quickly to get a result. And we, I want to say we're right up there with the most comeback wins in the National Hockey League this year. And I remember multiple times going, you know, in between the second and third period and we would have a discussion about how we were going to find our way out of this situation. And we've responded in those moments a lot. And so I feel like though we have gone through a lot of in-game adversity and things, and we're a very competitive, passionate, fiery group. And so there's some discussion and heated moments on the bench in that, and feel like we've been through our fair share of those moments this year.
What were your expectations going into the year, and have they changed in regard to what success looks like in the playoffs now?
Yeah, another really, yes, they have changed. And I honestly truly believe that we were going to be a good team. I thought we could be a playoff team. That was my, we don't talk about that stuff here. We don't set out goals, points, objectives. We want to win the division. We talk about a weekly plan and here's what we're doing to get better and here's how we're going to approach these next three games. But in the back of my mind, I genuinely believe we were a playoff team. We did use, as a group, I'll be honest with you, we used a little bit of, you know, the outside world and doubting our group and some of the odds of us being a playoff team and this and that. Like, I think that fueled us a little bit for sure. And we would use that from time to time, but I thought genuinely that we could be a playoff team. Did I think we'd be sitting where we are right now, Darren? No, I didn't think we'd be, you know, in the President's Trophy conversation and be sitting number one in the Eastern Conference and all that. But after being around this group and having seen them grown and the way that they've played and the way that they've responded, I absolutely, in the second half, I'm thinking the sky's the limit for this group. We absolutely can play with any team in this league. And, you know, it's still going to be difficult and there's still going to be naysayers and we're not going to be the quote unquote favorite going in the playoffs. We know that. But we also believe that we can play with any team in this league.
Hard to imagine the team that gets to 100 points first isn't going to be a favorite.
Does that bug you?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because I get it. I understand what people are looking at and the numbers and the analytics. And I'm a big analytics guy, so I'm diving into numbers too. And sometimes we defy a little bit of the odds. Last year we did with the goal differential that everybody, you know, but that didn't bother me when people spoke about the goal differential because I'm watching the film and looking at the numbers. I'm like, yeah, we got blown out in a lot of games and we won a lot of tight games. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me at all. Because I know obviously we have our work cut out for us and there's a ton of talented teams in this league.
As we record this, the grade eight is at 888. So how do you manage, and I don't want to call it a distraction, but how do you manage all the attention on the record versus your team and the goals of your team?
Yeah, that's starting to get more challenging by the day. I'm not going to lie to you about that with the amount of media that's around. And you can feel it on the bench. You can feel it in buildings. O has done a masterful job of really downplaying it with his teammates, downplaying it, just focused on the team portion, which has been really, I think, helped a lot. In game, I feel pretty good about, you know, we're worried about winning a hockey game and putting O in positions to have success is really no different now than it was at the beginning of the season. I know the deployment that I need to try to find for him. I know the matchups that I need to try to find for him on a nightly basis. And that hasn't really changed. Like I'll give you an example. Last night, there's an empty net situation. Okay, 3-1, he's going out there. It gets a little tighter and now I don't like the matchup, so now he's not out there. Mm-hmm. And so, Yeah, it's becoming, and the gravity of what's going on is increasing by the day and by every goal. But I really think our group is doing a really good job of not letting it affect our nuts and bolts, affect our game and what that looks like, or me as a coach, my deployment, or how he goes out, or really trying to force it of, gosh, I got to get O out again to try to score a goal.
And it's only going to get worse or better, depending on how you look at it, when Wayne and Gary start following you.
Yeah, you're right. And the media and family stuff that starts to come into play, and people traveling, and it's only going to grow.
Have you met Wayne Gretzky?
I have not.
What?
I have not.
That's going to happen.
I know. And he was my childhood idol. So, yeah.
What are you going to say to him?
I don't know yet. I haven't thought about that. I walked by him at the Heritage Classic. He was doing the outdoor. He was on the panel. And when I was with Toronto, Sheldon and myself and the rest of the coaches, and we were on the backside, but never got to say hello.
Do you have a plan for the circle to get smaller as you get closer to the record with the team? How do you manage all the noise?
That's a tough one for me because I've been hearing, you know, and PR has done a really good job of saying, okay, here's what's on the horizon. Here's what's going to happen. Keep this in the back of your mind. I'm going to do my best, but I also understand that there's a lot of things in play here with, family, the National Hockey League, coverage of this historic moment. So I have to keep my coach hat on, but I also have to be respectful of the fact that it's 2025 and the coverage and the things that go into this stuff now. Everybody's being mic'd up now for the last, you know, bench is being mic'd up. There's cameras in the room and there's a lot of stuff going on, but You do get a little bit more comfortable with it. It's like they do those shows like the Hard Knocks or the Amazon show that they did in Toronto. I remember talking to Kiefer a lot about that, and you just kind of become immune to them being around you, and it's just kind of business as usual. And then you catch yourself, you're like, oh, there's four other people in the room.
and then there's these damn podcasters trying to get all your attention. So let me get this straight. Wayne was your idol as a kid, but you lived on the island, so you were a Canucks fan that cheered for the Oilers?
So I was a Wayne fan. Okay. So I was actually an Oilers fan. And then when he went to LA, I was a huge LA Kings fan.
Wow.
So I pulled for them against Montreal, and I always, Kirk Muller's on our staff. So him and I have some great talks about the illegal curve with Marty McSorley and all of the, some great stuff.
Hey, you got to get one of those Silver Eastons somehow.
I know. I've got an old, so it was my first sort of prized possession. I got an old Red Titan. It must have been in 80, probably would have been around 85. I got a red Titan signed by Wayne.
No way.
Yeah.
Those were always the greatest road hockey sticks because they had that little plastic on the bottom. And they wouldn't wear down.
Yep. It would protect the bottom so you could, it would last a little longer. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you know, a great, crazy story. So quickly, I had this stick in Vancouver Island for years, and I've moved away. It was sitting at my dad's house, and he said, you know, you should take this stick. It's just sitting here. And I said, okay, I'll get it. So last year, I got my dad to bring it over to when we played the Canucks, and I was going to take it on the plane with us back to D.C. So I got him to bubble wrap it up. I got our trainers to bring it on the plane back with the sticks. And so I bring it back to DC, and it's sitting, they brought it back from the Vancouver game, and it's sitting in my office. And I unwrap it from the bubble wrap, and it's just sitting in the corner. Well, I'm not paying any attention to it. You know, we're going through our meetings and sitting in here, and he starts to score, you know, pretty free. And then the next thing you know, I look over and I'm like, I'm meeting with O, and Wayne sticks over in the corner. I'm like, this is a good, it's creating some good juices for O. He's scoring right now. And so I have not touched it. I've left it sitting in there as kind of like this little reminder of O's chasing this. And he comes and sits in the office and is just sitting there.
Does he know that's there?
I honestly don't think he has a clue.
Because you know his stick collection. He might take that thing out of there.
I know. The only thing that's preventing it is it says to Spencer.
Yeah. Oh. Well, this has been fantastic. This really has. We're now two-thirds of the way through the South Carolina Stingrays coaches alumni in the National Hockey League, too, Darren. You know that.
I know. And
Bednar's going to be pissed because we haven't had him on yet.
Well, you guys had worse.
Oh, he was on last week. The day before you coached head-to-head against him.
Oh, nice, nice.
What was that like for you?
It's awesome. We spent a lot of time together. Great friend. So proud of him and what he's accomplished in becoming an NHL head coach. And yeah, we spend in the East Coast League, there's just two coaches. So you spend so much time together in a cell block office in the bowels of a minor pro hockey and on the road on buses. And so you create these bonds and you share through all the adversity and learn so much about the game with one another. There's a really special bond of coaching in the minor leagues when you're just a couple of you watching film, breaking games down and going out to eat at, you know, Subway $5 foot
and with a coupon.
Yes, I got to buy one, get one free. Yeah. I'm going to be on the bus for 14 straight hours.
That's right. One for the bus. That's right.
there's that old saying, you know, you'd never meet your heroes because you'd be disappointed. Heard a lot about you. And this is it just passed over all of it, exceeded all expectations. Cool personality.
Here's the other thing. I'm mad at Sheldon. I'm mad at Sheldon now. You know why?
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 Because in the 2 years you were here in Toronto, you didn't speak very much.
They don't let you.
That's why I'm mad at Sheldon.
Oh, that goes higher than him. That's
that's a Babcock rule. That was a silly old Babcock rule.
I think it was Lou.
Maybe.
I think it's a Lou rule. And then Kyle just inherited that.
Tell
and
you what.
Yeah.
You mean I'll be honest, when they said Spencer Carberry's been hired by the Washington Capitals, he was spent 2 years in Toronto. I said, he did?
Well, hold on. Would you let this guy talk? He'd be hired and the coach wouldn't have say another word the rest of the year. This is amazing.
That's good for the game, though.
The team would be like, we'll lose them in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Awesome. Spencer, great job, and congratulations. I can't wait to watch you in the moment that the record is set, and then subsequently the Stanley Cup playoff march. This has been really enlightening.
Don't bring the Sharpie out too quick for Wayne, okay?
I won't. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thanks, pal.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Spencer Carberry was great. Here's the man in charge of everything that goes on the ice in the National Hockey League, Colin Campbell. That should be actually what's on your business card.
It is on his business card.
Fancy titles. Yeah. Like everything that happens on the ice.
So to be clear, let's be accurate. It's Senior Executive Vice President in charge of hockey operations.
My title's better.
I think you messed it up.
I did?
You got to
check your book or what?
Yeah, I'm called the... Senior, yeah, you're right.
I know.
Vice President of Hockey Operations.
Yes.
I like the fact that you come on and what you really want to talk about are the masks on my wall.
Well, I'm in charge of everything right now and mostly of everything that people don't like. even when a team wins or loses, I get the other team who's racing them calling me up and saying we screwed up the call.
Oh,
you know what I mean? It's crazy. So
before we talk about that, let's talk about you just finished the manager's meetings for the first time in a long time. There hasn't been a recommended rule change. Are you serious?
Yep. I think, you know, I hate to say this, but I wasn't in favor of the Four Nations. Don't tell my boss, but he'll probably hear this.
Too late.
But
he's a subscriber, so it's okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm kind of old school in the sense that I don't like to take this time of year, take teammates, put them against each other, and they're sitting with their enemy for the past 4 months, will be their enemy in another 2 weeks. I Marchand's with Bennett. Well, now he's with him. Now he's with him with the Florida. But it was a wonderful tournament. And I think because we haven't played in national hockey for a while, all the players who haven't played really got behind their country. You know, the right teams won. So unfortunately for Sweden and Finland, it wouldn't have been a good tournament if they played in the finals. We all know that. And I think it just gave hockey a kickstart in areas that people didn't realize how good a game it is.
Yeah.
And so it kind of flavored our game, and people said, you know, why do we got to be so critical of things? It's a good game. So they could return to criticizing certain things, but, you know, they took a look at overtime. You know, I think it's in a good place. There's not a lot of shootouts, and the overtimes are good once they get going. So no one was questioning it. No one even mentioned, should we go to 7 minutes from five, you know, after
wasn't even discussed?
Nope. We discussed a lot of things, but not that. And I think, you know, the fact that the players didn't come out of it, I don't think the coaches were ready for it, nor the players in the Four Nations, because it was 10 minutes. They coached like they were coaching 5 minutes. And as you saw, mm-hmm. you know, the best players got exhausted. They weren't ready to play 5 minutes straight. So mm-hmm. and they didn't come out of it saying it was a great thing. And I don't think we used it. Would we use it once, twice in seven games? Maybe once?
Yeah,
Twice, right?
Twice. Okay, right. And
I thought it was twice.
Yeah, it was twice. You're right. And we really give them a lot of work to do the first day, John. You know, normally we give them different topics in the breakout groups. This time we give everyone the same topics, but we broke them up into groups of eight with NHL support, other people in the room. And we said, here you go. The reason we go to breakout groups, if you look at our general managers, list of our managers, you've got guys who are 80 and guys who are under 40. And so a lot of guys are reluctant to speak in a big group. You know, and you got Gary Bettman, Bill Daly sitting at the head table, myself. They're just reluctant to speak in a big group. But we brought things out. And Brian Burke told me one time, you know, regardless of what people think about general managers, they got to that position for a reason, and they bring, you know, different things to the table and good things. So it's good when you can get them into a group and have them speak. So we threw at them at least 55 coaches challenges. We said, here, we hear it and we get upset. You know, we don't know what's going on with coaches challenges. We can't figure it out, you know. Like what goes into hot dogs, what goes on in coaches challenge, we don't know. So we said, okay, you guys try it. Here, we'll give you these. You think they're so easy. So, you know, at the end of a 3-hour exercise, they found out they're not so easy. And we had them vote on it. And we said, basically, the direction we want is that there's four of us, myself, Chris King, Kay Whitman, Rod Pasma, that do these. At the end of the day, if I'm there and I'm there for most of them, I make the final call. And I'd like to know where we're going with coaches challenge, what's acceptable. And the one thing I did find, one of the things you do find doing coaches challenges, you kind of lean towards protecting the goalie a little too much often. And he's still got to be able to do his job in the crease. Is there a goalie on this call? You got to be careful with being too overprotective of goaltenders. But there's so many things that go on in that crease, so many things that go on with a challenge. And, you know, we'll get so often from someone, this happened to it. I saw this in a game between Colorado and Dallas 2 months ago. We said it might have been similar, but none are exactly the same. So we had some real good conversations with coaches' challenges, and it was healthy for us as well as the managers.
Protecting the goalies is that's important, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's important, but scoring goals is important, and how you score them. And I got to tell you, you know, you're part of the broadcasting group mm-hmm. that interview a player between periods, and they'll ask Jimmy, "Hey, Jimmy, what do we got to do this next period? What's your team got to do?" He's usually mimicking the coach. "Well, we got to get more pucks to the blue, and we got to get bodies to the crease." What's yes. that mean? We got to. Yeah. You watch the next game with Columbus, but they scored no goals in four games or something, or one goal in mm-hmm. four games. You know mm-hmm. they're going to manage, and they do it in the playoffs too, Darren, all the time. They just, you got a good goalie, what do you got to do? You got to get activity to net, throw them off. So you end up with lots of activity in the crease, manufacturing goals, and he's got to be able to do his job. But at the same time, you don't want to protect him too much and say you can't touch a guy. But depends how you touch him, you know, like are you hitting his glove, are you hitting his skate? Can he do his job? You know, so it's there's so many different areas. How did he get to the crease? Did he get shoved in? Did he get cross-checked in? Did he get set after he made the original save? And the one thing we told the managers, you have to make sure is that this goaltender challenge is, the actual gist of the challenge is the referee gets to take a look at his original call and does he want to keep it? And that's where right. we got to keep that theme in our head. You know, he called no goal. So yeah. once he looks at what the whole world's looking at, some of the replays, do you want to change it? If we say lots of times, Darren, well, what's the call on the ice? Well, we're going to leave it because there's not enough here to change it, whether it's good goal or not good goal. They said, there's not enough here to change it. It is what it is. So we say that a lot.
Okay, so I'm going to say something you may disagree with, but there's goalies that actually embellish when they get contacted.
And that point was raised by the managers. And
Sergei Bobrovsky is a genius at it. Genius.
We don't say who's a genius at it. We hope we know. And there's also certain players that happen to go there all the time. And we don't say we consider that, but we do. You know, we know who goes to the net. We know who's there often. We know who's going to be there. We know goalies who embellish, who sell him. And, you know, like you look at the guy, the puck goes in. There's some goalies out there that never let a goal in. It's always someone else's fault.
Right.
So someone else's fault. I said, it's like when a puck goes in the stands. Everybody points up at the stands. That's a penalty. You know, no hold it now. Yeah. And some goalies and the puck goes in, you know, he got fouled some way. It's not his fault. So
are you going to do a goaltender embellishment memo?
We're going to do a memo. It's not quite going to be a goaltender, but we're going to do a memo. We got to follow up with some things. So,
and where would the managers have been on schedule? Because that has to be a concern.
Well, yes, they did raise it. And the exercise is, John, that there's eight groups six groups with a veteran general manager who heads those six groups. They have meetings prior to the general manager's meeting. They add agenda items that they like to be addressed. And they sent them in, and I think every group sent that in the schedule. But as you guys know, you're part of the business. You don't just take what you give. You tell them what you would like. This is what mm-hmm. we need. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the all-time big companies. You worked for them. You ran CBC Hockey Night in Canada. Like, you need Saturday nights. That's it.
Yep.
Some teams have to be around for Saturday night, and TNT wants their nights, and they want doubleheaders, and ESPN needs this, and the Central Time start, you know, in the playoffs at 8:45 is tough. But that TV requires the back-to-back. And so more and more, and maybe it's going to change too. You know, down the road with TV contracts running out. And what do we now have in Canada? The Monday night game. So they're pretty accepting, but, you know, at some point in time, you know, I still think, you know, I'm an old school. You still got to satisfy the people who rear ends are in the seats and drive our game. And you hate telling them to come to the rink in the playoffs, you know, on a Tuesday night at 8:45. But, you know, that's rubber the green.
Yeah. How realistic is September start, do you think?
It's out there with teams now, John. They realize they have to do it if they want a better schedule.
Right.
You know, like you can say, I don't want to have any games in September or even October, college football World Series. But, you know, like if you want to have a decent schedule and you want some of those games you need certain nights, you're going to have some games in September. And, you know, we talked, you know, I don't know what's going to come out of the CBA discussions, but we talked about dates and length of training camp and how many exhibition games do you need and how long should training camp be. So we discussed all that. You know, as you know, a lot of teams put their exhibition games on the season schedule, the season ticket holder schedule. So mm-hmm. How many games can you take away from them? How many do they need? So that was discussed, not at length, but it was brought up because Gary and Bill both spoke about a few things that they might be discussing with the new CBA.
I've never asked you this question without knowing the answer. So this is unique. What's the most pressing topic or subject of our game to you right now?
I think right now, how many 10:30 games are going to be scheduled in the next season? Because I can't stay up that late to watch all those games.
but the fact that there's nothing right there is good.
Yeah. Please, Vegas, would you play like 4 o'clock games?
We're always 10 o'clock Eastern, I would take the 5 o'clock starts. We have two this weekend, and that's great.
And there's some 10:30, 7:30 starts in your conference too, division.
In that division, that's for sure.
When we go to San Jose or LA and play a 7:30 start, that extra half hour for me, that's hindersome.
Think of us on Saturday or Sunday when we start at noon.
Yeah.
You know? I'm going to San Jose here at 10:30.
Believe you guys are – nobody cares what you guys are whining about. You're getting paid to do it. What are you talking about?
I would say, Darren, seriously, I worry about – not a worry, but we constantly are on watch for the flow of the game, how fast it's played. And I realize we need commercials, we need stoppages, but the way the game's played, you know, you want fans to come and enjoy it. And I see other sports drag on. I think, you know, we got to keep our game moving. All the little things, every little thing, you know, the way you drop the puck, you got to keep the flow of the game moving. And I think those little things in between whistle stoppages, I think are important for the game itself because you like the game to be fast. And I think that's what people want today. They want to see a game played fast.
Do you think the hurry-up face-off still exists?
It might be something we hear. It's a good question. It might be something we want to return to, you know, when I see, you know, sometimes they generate stoppages at the bench to give their goalie a rest. I don't think it's a problem where we got to outline it, but I think at some point in time we might want to look at that because, again, I think you got to address everything, the package, you know, even, you know, how many anthems are you playing? How many presentations? What's the length of the presentations? You know, like we tell teams, you know, it's fine to have a presentation, but between the end of warm-up and when the fourth line gets up there, it might be half an hour to 45 minutes, you know, like, yeah. So you want to get going. And in this world today, the fast food world, people want to get to a rink and get out of there. They want to see a good game, but they don't want to hang around forever. I don't know what they're doing in baseball. Are they doing the strikes and balls, and where are they going with technology?
No, I think they put the technology got pushed off another year. So,
right. Major leagues, yeah. Could you see one anthem or no anthems?
I stay out of that one. I've had.
Well, you mentioned it. You mentioned anthems, so that's why.
Well, I had a call on it, and again, this time it's a little political right now. I kind of enjoy it. I'm old school when it comes to that. I mean, between the drop of the puck at the start of the game and the end of the game, but we have to deal with celebrations and the length of them. The managers wanted us to, because some teams will drag on and make a big deal out of it. So anthems have kind of become part of it. And I'm not talking about the booing of the Canadian anthem or the U.S. anthem in Canada now, but I think things will pass. But again, that doesn't slow a game down, but it's got a little bit political.
Yeah. Hey, so the other night in Toronto, Colorado, Toronto, Kelly Sutherland trips and falls, gets hit by the puck. Steve Lorenz grabs it in the neutral zone and scores. Referee, it's right in the road ruck. Referee is part of the ice surface, except if it goes directly in off of him into the net. Correct?
Yep.
Do you ever foresee that changing? Like Kelly, I felt bad. Kelly's a good friend. I felt terrible for Kelly. I'm sure Kelly.
But it happens
terrible.
All the time. Pucks hit like the officials, and it goes to a guy in the slot, and it goes in. This was just so obvious.
There's a raise of concern, Kelly.
It's a little bit of a concern this time of year because there's a lot of teams watching that game, and they want certain teams to win, which would help them in the standings, and. Tampa and Florida are racing Toronto, and then the other side of the, it's Colorado. And we're going, okay, maybe in a place like that, if we had, they could come to us and we had, the big stick and said, we can make calls when we want to make calls. Let's correct this and do the right thing. The question always is, where do you stop?
Right.
Like, where do you stop and do the right thing? People say, well, over the course of 82 games, it's going to even out. Yes, it will. But over the course of a playoff series, it might not even out.
I was going to say, I would hate to see that happen in game 7 of a series.
Yeah, I would too. And so would the referee himself.
But, yeah, sure would Kelly. Yeah.
So I didn't even speak to Kelly on it. Maybe I shouldn't say Kelly like park it. I'm sure he feels worse than anybody. But we talked about it in at our meeting. We're watching the games, and Stephen was sitting there. We're all sitting in a room there. We had a room where we got all the games at night at our meetings. And what do you do to correct this? Do you put something in place where again, we could call down and say, okay, we're going to do the right thing, but. Where does that stop? Like last night, there was a trip in a game. It was your game.
Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you were across the ice, that looked like a trip.
It did.
Yeah. But if you show the camera work, he just blew a wheel.
The player toe picks and Mark's stick was in the area. Understand why it looked like a trip, but it wasn't even close to a trip.
But listen, when it's player on player, everything like that, that's different. This is somebody who's not supposed to be part of the play. And so like the, my gut said, the only thing that could have happened at that point is the puck hits Kelly like that and he stops it like he did, he blows the play dead. The onus would be on him to blow the play dead.
Rub of the green, baby. Rub of the green.
Well, listen, in November and October, I understand that. But here we are. It's going to be game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, and it happens. And I would hate to think that the lasting memory of the winning goal of the Stanley Cup is the referee tripping and falling and being hit with the puck and the play changing and happening that way. That's all I'm thinking.
I'll tell you what I told Mr. Snyder, Ed Snyder. when the first year I got this job, he kept telling me, you better fix that foot in the crease rule. You're going to have it happen in game seven. And I said, you know what? I called him up. So, you know, Mr. Snyder, it happened, but it was game six.
Yeah. Don't we all remember that?
Yes, we do. I tried to change that rule all year long. Harry Neal helped me. We had a something we were in. Harry Neal was doing a game and showed how crazy it was. And I tried to convince the managers. Couldn't get it done until the next season. Oh, boy, that was a long night.
Oh, tell me about it. It was already 2:30 in the morning.
Yes, right.
Hey, Coley, right, man. How many managers, how many coaches or managers would call you on any given day as at this time of the year?
And some are presents. I would say average. I got 3 calls today. They're good. They're calling the next day. Like in the old days when I had, you know, the Harry Sims and Glenn Sathers, they called right after the incident itself. Now they're respectful enough because I'm too old and grumpy. They call the next day. I'd say on the average, maybe 3 a day. Last night, we had, I think, 11 reviews. We had 3 going at one time. It was a busy night. And,
it was a crazy night.
Yeah. Goalie challenges, puck across the line. We had a bunch of them. And again, they all were meaningful games. They're involving everybody. And we got a call last week from a guy. Thought it was a kicked in goal, but he was from another team racing that team. You know, we get a lot of those calls too this time, you know, that don't like the calls. So, and I get it. It gets passionate. And, but they're pretty good now. The group's pretty good. We haven't had to find too many guys. George probably gets more calls than me. He's a younger guy and they try to beat him up. Not physically. George no. Perros sent me in supplemental right. discipline.
Yeah.
So he gets a few more calls. We always kid George. We said, you know, when things are going tough with these goalie challenges, we need a real crazy supplemental discipline incident to take the pressure off of us. You were.
I knew you were busy because I haven't talked to you in a while. So I wondered who was taking up your time.
I talked to your partner there just before the meetings.
Oh, did you?
Yep. He weighed in. Yes, he weighed in. That's okay. He called. I should say weighed in. Well, good chat with you guys.
Leave it at that. Thanks, Coley.
Yep. Take care.
Be good.
Thanks. See you, John.
Darren. Yep. See you, Coley.
Coley. I knew he was going to give you the gears. I knew it. You just couldn't help yourself. You had to poke away.
By the way, I'm not going to talk about him anymore. Because I'm going to get the phone call from him. And he's going to complain. But how, you know, listen, I want to talk about Spencer Carberry for a second. You know how special this guy is. How many coaches have we had on so far? Maybe 10 or 11 coaches so far?
Yeah.
Every one of those guys has had the public relations guy log on to the Zoom account, set it up, and then said, here's the coach. Today, Spencer did it all himself. Spencer was a one-man band. That's the sign of a guy that knows what's going on.
Yeah. Again, get back to our conversation right off the top of the show, managing the messages. Some coaches just want the PR people. Put the computer in front of me and I'll talk.
And they do a damn good job of it.
And they do a good job. That's 2 young coaches we've had in the last week. Very different tone. And
those two different than the older coaches you mean?
Well, I'm just thinking like John Tortorella, Mike Sullivan, Craig Berube. There's a lot of coach speak and they're veteran guys. They've been through it before. But like Spencer Carberry, I don't know whether I have as casual and fun of a conversation with my best buddies. Like if I get RJ on the phone, we'll talk and stuff, but I'm not sure we laugh as much as that.
No. I know he was, like I said, when your team's got 100 points, you're the first team to clinch a playoff spot. You got an off day and you're on the verge of being part of a lifetime milestone in 895. You better be able to laugh, right?
What should the coach do when Ovi breaks the record? Should he go on the ice with a high five Does he stand at the gate for the high five?
No.
Because the coach has been part of it, as important as anybody, because he's given them the ice time.
Listen, you know as well as I do, the moment the puck was in the net, you know, the red carpet's going to come out.
Everything. And the bench empties.
Everything, yeah. And but I think the coach, you know, I think there's a delineation. You know, coach, players. Players go on the ice, the coach stays on the bench. He'll have his time with Ovi at later on.
I hope he gets an Ovi stick to go with that Wayne stick. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good story. Pretty good story. All right.
You don't get those conversations everywhere or anywhere. Please share this interview. Do us a favor. Help us out because we'd love to just get everybody to know Spencer Carberry. I feel it's our obligation now, having gone through that and experienced him firsthand, to let everybody know what kind of guy this is.
Agreed. Good man.
BC so help boy. Us out. Share it, rate it, and pass it along with people. Subscribe as well so you don't miss an episode of 100% Hockey with Millardin. That's John over there.
That is the worst I have ever heard. That is the worst I have ever heard. Seriously. Seriously. Say goodbye, Darren.
Bye.
'Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.